So imagine a spammer calls your phone, right? But instead of relying on like a standard static block list, an automated script intercepts the call.
Oh, this is the pettiest automation I've seen in a while. It's brilliant.
It really is. It spins up a conversational voice agent and actively traps the scammer in this endless looping conversation.
Right, just completely draining their time.
Yeah, exactly. The script uses dynamic prompts so it actually sounds confused. It asks the spammer to repeat themselves, pretends to, like, go fetch a credit card from another room. It just acts as a relentless, open-ended drain on the attacker's resources.
Which is, I mean, it's the absolute definition of chaotic good in software engineering. But beyond the humor of it, it actually perfectly encapsulates the fundamental architectural shift we are witnessing this week.
How so?
Well, we are no longer building passive tools that just sit idle, waiting for a command. We're deploying active, relentless, autonomous agents.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this. Because if you are listening to this deep dive right now and you are a builder, an operator, or an engineering lead, consider this your mission briefing.
Yeah, we are skipping the fluff.
Exactly. We're cutting straight to the structural shifts, the product launches, and the capital deployments that are fundamentally changing how you have to build and scale in tech today.
And the developments over the last few days are, they're structural, they're not iterative. If we look at the core themes emerging from the data we've gathered, we're seeing three massive shifts.
Okay, lay them out for us.
First, the death of turn-based AI, which is being driven by latency dropping basically below the threshold of human perception.
Wow.
Second, there's this silent, unannounced hiring freeze settling across the industry as the economics of productivity finally invert. And third, the escalation of an automated cyber arms race that is moving way faster than human defenders can actually patch.
So, to frame this entire discussion, I want you to hold one question in your mind while you listen. Are you building for the AI of 6 months ago or the AI being deployed today?
Because the physics of the interaction layer has completely changed.
They really have. Let's dive straight into that first shift, the end of turn-based AI. Because if you're building an app, a customer service portal, or any kind of user interface, the basic mechanics of how humans talk to computers just got completely rewritten.
Right, which brings us to the legacy concept of turn-based AI. Up until this week, interacting with a multimodal model has essentially been like using a high-tech walkie-talkie.
Push to talk, basically.
Exactly. You send your prompt, whether that's text or a voice recording. The client packages that data, sends it to the server processes the tokens autoregressively, generates a response, and sends it back. It's a discrete, sequential process. You speak, then you wait.
Send a telegraph, wait for the telegraph back, over and out. But that's entirely unnatural, right? When humans communicate, we talk over each other.
All the time.
We use back channeling. We nod. We say, We react to a facial expression or a hand gesture before the other person has even finished their sentence.
And that continuous messy flow of data is exactly what former OpenAI CTO Mira Murati's new lab, Thinking Machines, has managed to replicate.
Right, they just unveiled that research preview.
Yeah, a model called TML Interaction Small. And what's fascinating here is the underlying architecture. It is a 276 billion parameter model.
Which is sizable.
It is, but the real breakthrough isn't the parameter count, it's the data pipeline itself. It doesn't wait for a discrete turn to end. It processes audio, video, and text as continuous 200 millisecond streams.
200 milliseconds, that is a fraction of a blink.
Exactly. It's ingesting the world in these continuous overlapping slices, which brings its response latency down to just 0.4 seconds.
That's incredibly fast.
For context, average human conversational gap times hover around 200 to 250 milliseconds. So at 0.4 seconds, the machine is operating right on the threshold of natural human rhythm.
But wait, let me push back on the physics of this for a second. Because that 0.4 second latency is almost certainly in a perfect lab environment, right?
Well, sure, optimal conditions.
In the real world, running over a 5G cellular network, dealing with UDP packet loss, jitter, and edge compute routing, I mean, doesn't this just turn into a chaotic Zoom call?
That's a valid concern.
If the AI is constantly trying to interrupt me, but it's lagging by half a second because my signal dropped, that sounds incredibly annoying, not revolutionary.
Yeah, that is the exact engineering hurdle. And it's why the architecture is shifting toward predictive streaming rather than discrete payload delivery.
Predictive streaming.
Right. To mitigate the network latency you're talking about, these models aren't just reacting to what you said, they're constantly calculating the probabilistic trajectory of your sentence.
Oh, wow. So they're guessing where I'm going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you're explaining a complex diagram to your camera and you point to the wrong node, the AI can react to the visual cue and begin generating the audio correction before your voice even stops.
That is wild.
It is a fundamental shift from the walkie-talkie paradigm to what we might call the dinner party paradigm.
It's like having a highly caffeinated coworker who anticipates your sentences. And Thinking Machines isn't operating in a vacuum here either. OpenAI just rolled out their real-time API, which is explicitly targeting this exact same conversational fluidity.
Yeah, they dropped a massive suite of tools. They released GPT Real-Time 2, which integrates GPT-5 class reasoning, specifically tuned for live, multi-threaded interactions.
Right.
Alongside it, they deployed GPT Real-Time Translate. That one is capable of handling over 70 languages and translating into 13 simultaneously. And then there's GPT Real-Time Whisper for live speech-to-text.
But the most revealing aspect isn't even the feature list. It's the economic structure of the API.
The billing is fascinating.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Look at the billing. Whisper and Translate are billed by the minute. They're treating those functions as utility streams, like water flowing from a tap.
Right, it's just a constant flow.
But GPT Real-Time 2 is still billed by token use. It shows that OpenAI is trying to build a bridge. They want developers to leave behind simple text-to-speech replies and start building models that actively listen, reason, and execute functions during an ongoing conversation.
And we also have to look at the competitive response from Google. Leaks ahead of I/O revealed screenshots of a revised UI for Gemini Omni.
And the video ones, right.
Yeah, specifically showcasing the model card for their video capabilities.
Mm.
Early telemetry from these leaks suggests the prompt adherence is remarkable, but it highlights the core bottleneck of this new paradigm.
Which is the cost, right?
Exactly. Continuous multimodal processing burns through compute credits at an astonishing rate.
Because it takes immense server power to ingest video frame by frame while simultaneously analyzing audio waveforms and generating text. It's an infernal heat engine for GPUs.
Which is why the expectation is that Google will ship Omni in tiered variants.
Mm.
So a flash tier for lightweight, text-heavy inference, and a pro tier for full multimodal streaming.
Makes sense.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, all these developments, Marathi's TML, OpenAI's real-time API, Google's Omni, they all represent a fundamental inference shift.
So what does this actually mean for you, the operator trying to ship an app next week? It means the bottleneck has moved. We used to worry about generation speed. Now the critical failure point is memory.
Precisely. If you have an agent that can stream video and audio in real time and interrupt the user, it requires an incredibly robust memory hierarchy to maintain state.
It can't just forget what you said 5 seconds ago.
Right. It needs short-term context buffers to know what was just said, vector databases for long-term project recall, and a state machine to track the overarching goal of the interaction. Without that memory infrastructure, your incredibly fast, multimodal agent is just a highly articulate amnesiac.
It completely breaks the old wireframes. I mean, if I'm building a customer service portal, the old way was safe. User submits a ticket, AI reads it, AI sends a response. State is perfectly contained.
Very clean, very predictable.
But now I have to design an interface where the user can interrupt the AI mid-sentence, the AI can visually see the user getting frustrated, and both sides have to gracefully recover without losing the shared context of the database transaction they were trying to complete.
You aren't designing screens anymore. You're designing conversational guardrails.
Exactly. And this transition in how we build the interaction layer leads us directly into our second major theme. Because we have these incredibly fast, interrupt-driven, context-aware agents, how are they actually impacting the bottom line?
Yeah, we need to transition from the technology of AI to the raw economics of it.
We have to talk about the productivity illusion. I want to anchor this in a phenomenal retrospective. Our sources pulled on Frederick P. Brooks's 1986 essay, No Silver Bullet. It's basically required reading for anyone managing engineers.
Oh, absolutely. No Silver Bullet Essence and Accident in Software Engineering.
Yeah.
Brooks proposed a pretty devastating thesis back then. He argued that there is no single development, either technology or management technique, that promises even one order of magnitude, like a 10x improvement in productivity, reliability, or simplicity.
And the industry has spent 40 years desperately trying to prove him wrong. We threw version control at the problem. We threw massive IDEs, automated testing, CI/CD pipelines, AWS cloud infrastructure.
Even organizational frameworks like Google's Site Reliability Engineering.
Right. SRE gave Google incredible uptime, but it didn't magically 10x the entire industry's output. It was always cumulative.
This raises an important question, though. Is artificial intelligence the silver bullet Brooks claimed didn't exist? The empirical data from the sources suggests Well, not exactly.
The mechanics of why are fascinating. I mean, AI undeniably generates dramatically more code. The sheer volume of syntax a junior developer can push today compared to 5 years ago is staggering.
Oh, it's night and day.
But the sources highlight a critical concept here, which is Jevons' paradox applied to software engineering. As the resource of code generation becomes cheaper and more efficient, we don't just bank the time savings, we consume all of it by building vastly more complex systems.
Right. The complexity of the architecture expands to absorb the speed of generation. The sources cite the development of Grand Theft Auto 6 as a prime example of this.
Such a good example.
Despite having access to advanced AI tooling, procedural generation, and incredibly sophisticated physics engines, the game is still taking over a decade to develop. Why? Because the orchestration of that complexity, managing the interplay between millions of overlapping systems, it requires intense human oversight that simply cannot be automated yet.
We are iterating faster, but the finish line keeps moving further away. However, that doesn't mean AI isn't fundamentally altering the economics of the tech sector. It just isn't showing up as a magical 10x output of finished software. It's showing up on the balance sheet as the silent hiring freeze.
And the numbers there are stark. Take Monday.com as a bellwether. Last fall, they projected a standard 20% workforce expansion for the current year to support their growth targets.
Pretty standard sauce stuff.
But by February, they revised that down to the mid-teens. And now, they have publicly stated their headcount will remain largely flat straight through 2026.
And they aren't hiding why. It's entirely due to the productivity gains AI is already delivering internally. They simply do not need the bodies to maintain their sauce growth trajectory.
And they are not an outlier by any means. Shopify, Spotify, Uber, GitLab, they are all running the exact same playbook. GitLab is actually taking the OpEx savings from not hiring and routing it directly into CapEx, buying more AI compute.
We are witnessing a massive substitution effect. Companies are trading human wage costs for usage-based AI computing costs.
Which is a huge shift in how companies scale.
But it feels like a trap waiting to spring. I mean, are we just trading predictable salaries for unpredictable cloud bills when these models inevitably raise their API pricing?
That is the long-term risk, absolutely. But in the short term, it is creating what the data calls the tech hiring paradox. We are currently seeing 52,000 layoffs happening simultaneously alongside 67,000 open tech roles.
So what are those 67,000 open roles doing if we aren't hiring junior devs to write boilerplate anymore? What is the profile of the engineer we actually need?
The profile has basically shifted from creator to orchestrator. Companies are shedding roles dedicated to rote generation and aggressively hunting for talent that understands how to architect, secure, and manage networks of AI agents.
That makes total sense.
You no longer scale by hiring an army of coders. You scale by deploying agents correctly.
Let's get into the mechanics of what deploying agents correctly actually looks like for a developer right now, because it is light years beyond just asking Copilot to finish a Python function. Anthropic just shipped a research preview in Claude Code called Agent View, and the workflow is wild.
Agent View essentially attempts to kill tab swapping and manual context management. It acts as a unified command center for synthetic workers.
Like a dashboard.
Exactly. You have a dashboard showing which AI agents are actively executing tasks, which have completed their runs, and which are blocked awaiting human cryptographic signing or architectural decisions.
The command line implementation is what blew my mind, honestly. They introduced a /big command, allowing you to throw a massive debugging task to an agent in the background while you keep working on the main thread.
Yeah, true multitasking.
But the /batch command is the real paradigm shift. Say you need to execute a complex refactor across a massive legacy code base. You run /batch, and the system splits the task across parallel agents. Each agent spins up its own Git work tree, creates its own branch, executes the changes, and opens its own pull request.
And this is where we transition from single agent generation to multi-agent orchestration. You're managing a distributed cluster of synthetic developers.
But let me play devil's advocate for a minute. Anyone who has managed a massive monorepo knows that merge conflicts are rarely just syntax errors. They are semantic conflicts.
Just always.
Right. So if I have 5 agents simultaneously refactoring the database schema and the authentication flow, how does the system know that Agent A's brilliant optimization didn't just break the user login logic that Agent B relies on? Parallel agents sound like a fast track to merge hell.
That is the exact friction point of orchestration, and it's why we have to look at how Shopify has structured their internal AI environment. They deployed an internal coding agent named River. Currently, River is handling 1 out of every 8 pull requests merged into their central repository.
One in eight PRs written entirely by an agent. But the secret sauce isn't just the foundational model they used, is it? It's the psychological environment they forced the agent into.
Exactly. They did not allow River to operate inside private IDE sessions or siloed direct messages. They forced the agent to work entirely in public Slack channels.
Think about the human equivalent of this. Imagine being a junior developer on your first week and your manager says, hey, you're going to write all your code on a massive projector in the middle of the open plan office. And every time you make a logic error, the senior architects are going to walk up, grab a red marker, and correct your code in front of the entire company. For a human being, that is a psychological nightmare.
It would completely destroy team morale. No one could work like that.
No one.
But for a machine learning model, it is the ultimate reinforcement learning environment. By forcing River to make its mistakes in public, human engineers could instantly spot hallucinated dependencies or semantic errors and correct the agent directly in the thread.
The feedback loop was instant, and the metrics prove it. In just 2 months of this public deployment, River's PR merge rate, the rate at which its code was actually accepted into production without breaking the build, shot up from 36% to 77%.
Simon Willison, the co-creator of Django, offered a profound insight on this dynamic. He compared it to the early days of Midjourney. Midjourney didn't launch with a sleek private web app. They launched in a chaotic public Discord server.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Willison noted that when you make the work visible, every prompt, every failure, and every correction becomes a lesson for everyone watching, human and machine alike.
So if I'm an engineering lead listening to this, the mandate is pretty clear. Pull your AI tools out of private windows. If you want rapid, compound improvement, you have to build in the town square. This perfectly illustrates how the role of AI is shifting from pure generation to evaluation. We are starting to use AI as a judge.
This is a critical conceptual leap. We can look at the EPFL research data on a framework called Synthogy to understand this. Synthogy was built for the field of chemistry, specifically for retrosynthesis.
For those outside of chemistry, retrosynthesis is basically reverse engineering a cake. You know the exact molecular structure of the cake you want to end up with, but you have to work backward to figure out the exact recipe, the ingredients, and the temperatures required to synthesize it.
Historically, we would use AI to try and generate those chemical routes from scratch. But Synthogy takes a fundamentally different approach. It acts as an intelligent logic gate layered on top of existing legacy chemistry software.
Right. It doesn't write the recipe. A human chemist gives the agent plain language parameters like, you know, ensure we form a molecular ring early in the process or avoid using these specific toxic protection steps. Synthogy then takes the hundreds of possible routes generated by the legacy software, evaluates them against the human semantic instructions, and selects the optimal path.
And its efficacy as a judge is remarkable. In a blind test evaluated by 36 human chemists across 368 different pathways, the AI's judgment matched the expert human chemists 71.2% of the time.
It is shifting from a generative model to a discriminative model. We obsess over the AI writing the code or painting the picture, but the more profound enterprise application might be using AI as a high-speed filter that applies human intent to massive data sets.
That discriminative capability is essential when you start connecting these agents to physical systems.
Yeah.
Because the speed at which software scales is now bleeding into hardware.
Look at Figure. They just dropped footage of their humanoid robots, the Figure 03 models, operating completely autonomously, coordinating to clean a bedroom, fold clothes, make the bed. But the real story isn't the demo video. It's the manufacturing scale.
Figure announced that they have accelerated the production line for the O3 humanoids at their California facility from one robot per day to one robot per hour.
One autonomous, spatially aware humanoid rolling off the line every 60 minutes. That is physical hardware beginning to mirror the deployment velocity of software.
But if we synthesize these threads, agents writing one in eight PRs,
yeah.
AI evaluating complex chemistry, robots scaling by the hour, it reveals a terrifying vulnerability. If human developers are utilizing these autonomous systems to scale production, what happens when malicious actors utilize the exact same orchestration frameworks?
Which launches us into the third major area of this deep dive, the escalating security arms race. If Shopify's River is writing your features at machine speed, it is also writing your attack surface at machine speed.
The velocity of cyber warfare has fundamentally detached from human reaction times.
Google's cybersecurity division just published a report that is a massive red flag. Criminal hackers successfully utilized an AI model to discover and weaponize a zero-day vulnerability in a widely used open-source system administration tool.
We need to be very precise about why this is an inflection point. Threat actors have been using LLMs to write better phishing emails or optimize existing malware scripts for over a year.
That's nothing new.
Right.
Right.
But this is the first documented instance of an AI being used to discover a previously unknown vulnerability, a zero day, and then autonomously package it into an exploit chain for deployment.
How does that even work technically? Are they just asking ChatGPT to read the code base and spot mistakes?
No, it is far more sophisticated than that. It involves combining traditional automated fuzzing, throwing random data at an application to make it crash, with a semantic understanding of an LLM.
Oh, I see.
The fuzzer finds a crash, but instead of a human reverse engineer spending weeks analyzing the memory dump to see if the crash is exploitable, the LLM analyzes the abstract syntax tree and the memory registers to instantly map out the exploit path.
So the machine finds the hole and the machine writes the bullet. And we are seeing this exact kind of automated aggression in the supply chain as well. Look at the TanStack NPM attack.
This was a massive event. 84 TanStack NPM packages were systematically compromised. To grasp the scale here, several of these packages are foundational front-end dependencies that see over 12 million downloads a week.
And supply chain attacks are so insidious because they abuse the trust architecture of modern development. A developer runs NPM install expecting a clean library, but the compromised package contains malicious post-install scripts that execute the moment the package hits the local environment. It poisons the well at the source.
It's brutal.
TanStack had to completely deprecate the versions, coordinate with GitHub to purge the actions caches, and orchestrate a massive global cleanup.
It illustrates a terrifying reality. We are entering an environment that resembles algorithmic high-frequency trading, but applied to cyber warfare. The machines are hunting vulnerabilities and deploying exploits faster than a human security analyst can even receive the pager alert.
It's a self-driving car race where the cops and the robbers have both thrown the steering wheel out the window. If hackers are using AI to discover zero days, human teams physically cannot write the patches fast enough.
Which means the only viable defense is an automated defense. Operators are being forced to deploy AI simply to maintain parity.
And the major tech platforms are moving massive amounts of capital to arm those defenders. OpenAI just took the wraps off Daybreak.
Daybreak represents the weaponization of defense. It is a frontier platform pairing their GPT 5.5 architecture with a specialized tool called Codex Security.
How is it different from existing tools?
It does not wait for an alert. It actively ingests a company's entire repository, builds an editable, real-time threat model of the architecture, hunts for vulnerabilities, and autonomously generates the patches.
We are also seeing the open source community fight back with similar tools. There's a massive grassroots trend right now around OpenClaw Codex workflows. Developers are spinning up completely disposable eBPF-secured sandboxes to let AI agents rapidly test and fix bugs without risking the host system. It's reportedly resolving tickets 10x faster.
The enterprise deployment layer is totally rearranging itself to support this kind of secure orchestration. Look at AWS. They just made Anthropic's cloud platform generally available natively on AWS.
But the key here isn't just access to the model. AWS knows that enterprise CISOs are terrified of data leakage. The selling point is that the inference is processed entirely within the customer's virtual private cloud. The data never crosses the AWS external security boundary to reach Anthropic servers.
It is all about data sovereignty. OpenAI recognizes the same friction, which is why they just launched a monumental $10 billion deployment company joint venture.
$10 billion dedicated purely to getting the tech inside enterprise firewalls. And to execute that, they outright acquired an AI consulting firm called Tomorrow, specifically to parachute over 150 elite integration engineers directly into Fortune 500 companies.
Because they realized that selling an API key is no longer a viable enterprise strategy. If a bank wants to deploy an AI that handles sensitive customer data and writes code, they need human integration teams to build the vector databases, the memory hierarchies, and the security sandboxing we've been discussing.
This directly ties into the dizzying amount of capital moving around the ecosystem right now. We have to look at how Wall Street and the courts are reacting to this infrastructure build-out. Let's trace the money and the leverage.
A critical piece of leverage is playing out in the litigation between Elon Musk and OpenAI. Musk's legal team has filed evidence attempting to prove that Microsoft exercises undue control over the AI lab.
The core of their argument hinges on the chaos from last year. They submitted communications showing that Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella directly intervened to orchestrate Sam Altman's return just 5 days after the board ousted him. Musk is trying to prove that Microsoft isn't just a partner, they are the puppet master.
Meanwhile, Satya Nadella has testified under oath that Musk never raised any concerns about the Microsoft partnership prior to the lawsuit.
It is a battle over who controls the foundational layer of the enterprise security and deployment market we just analyzed, and the stakes are astronomical. To put a number on it, recent filings indicate that former OpenAI chief scientist Ilya Sutskever's equity stake is now valued at roughly $7
billion. $7 billion for one individual's equity.
Right. And if we look at the hardware required to run the continuous 200-millisecond audio streams we discussed in Section 1, the capital requirements are staggering. Cerebra Systems, which builds the massive wafer-scale engine specifically designed for this kind of intense inference load, just raised their IPO pricing range to $150 to $160 a share.
They are targeting a $4.5 billion raise to finance the manufacturing of the physical compute infrastructure that makes the dinner party paradigm possible.
We're seeing capital flow into agentic infrastructure everywhere. Circle just raised $222 million for its ARC stablecoin blockchain, valuing the project at $3 billion. They are building the financial rails for autonomous agents to execute payments natively. And in the media space, the pivot to AI generation is accelerating. Byron Allen is acquiring 52% of BuzzFeed for $120 million.
The financial structuring of that buyout is incredibly revealing, though.
It is. He is only putting up $20 million in cash. The remaining $100 million is a five-year note secured by nothing but the shares themselves. In tandem with the buyout, BuzzFeed founder Jonah Peretti is converting his super voting shares, stepping down as CEO, and taking the helm of a new division explicitly named BuzzFeed AI.
It is a capitulation to the reality that media production is shifting from human-driven content to AI-generated scale.
And on the consumer distribution side, Uber promoted CMO Jill Hazelbaker to President and Chief Corporate Affairs Officer, while Apple finally dropped iOS 26.5, bringing encrypted RCS messaging to the ecosystem, standardizing the protocol layer, just as these multimodal agents are poised to flood our communications channels.
Okay, we have covered a massive amount of ground here.
We really have. From continuous 0.4-second multimodal processing and the memory architectures required to support it, to Jevons' paradox causing the silent hiring freeze, all the way to AI discovering 0 days and the multi-billion dollar capital moves funding the defense. So what does this actually mean for you?
If you are an operator or builder trying to navigate this week, we can synthesize this into three direct actionable directives.
First, stop building walkie-talkies. The text-in, text-out paradigm is dead. You need to immediately evaluate your UX for continuous, real-time audio and visual streaming. If your application cannot handle a user interrupting it mid-process, you are building legacy software.
Second, make your AI's work visible. Do not isolate your synthetic agents in private environments. Follow Shopify's River playbook. Move your internal coding agents into public Slack channels or transparent GitHub PR threads. Force them to learn in public so your human engineers can provide real-time corrections. That is the only way to drive your accuracy rates from the 30s into the 80s.
Third, audit your dependencies right now. Specifically, check your package JSON and your lock files for any of the 84 compromised TanStack NPM packages. With AI actively automating the discovery and exploitation of vulnerabilities, your supply chain hygiene is the only thing standing between you and a catastrophic breach.
The velocity of the ecosystem demands an entirely new operational cadence.
Which leaves us with one final, deeply provocative thought to mull over as you get back to your code bases. We spent this deep dive analyzing the inference shift, how agents now require deep vector memory and context to function. And we analyzed the silent hiring freeze, how companies are refusing to add human headcount, instead relying on these highly contextual agents.
If you merge those two realities, it creates a fascinating and honestly somewhat unsettling long-term dynamic regarding intellectual property.
Exactly. Think about how a tech company traditionally works. When a senior engineer leaves for a new job, their institutional knowledge, the nuanced reasons why a specific database was chosen or why a certain API was deprecated walks out the door with them. The company experiences brain drain.
It's a classic problem.
But what happens 5 years from now when you've been running an AI agent that never sleeps, never quits, and has perfect memory of every single pull request, every architecture debate in Slack, and every incident report?
It fundamentally relocates the soul of the company.
Does the AI eventually become the most senior engineer in your entire organization simply because it is the only entity left that actually remembers why everything was built the way it was?
That is a profound question for anyone leading a team today.
Definitely something to think about as you navigate the week. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the sources. Keep building. We will catch you next time.